Welcome to the RSP Cast. This is episode number 84. It is part of the ongoing offensive projection series that Dwayne McFarlane and I are conducting of the league's offenses. We are about halfway through with the league at this point, and this is a continuation of a longer conversation that Dwayne and I had beginning with the San Francisco 49ers offense that we did in episode 83. We're continuing on here and marking this one as episode 84 with the Los Angeles Rams. So hope you enjoy it. And again, if you have any feedback for me, you know where to reach me.
I would like to you know, we're going to go ahead and move on then. And let's go ahead and move on to the Los Angeles Rams. And I'll give the overview this time in terms of, you know, what we have here. We have a team that, you know, that got to the Super Bowl, that won a big matchup with the Chiefs, you know, in the game where Todd Gurley got hurt, and then doing what Todd Gurley has been known to do since high school, which is to play on basically injured limbs that most people wouldn't ever play on and not tell anybody about it if he can help it, or try to, you know, brave through it. Because back in high school, the Sporting News reported about how he played on two sprained ankles that he could barely walk in a straight line. And he played on that both ways as a defensive back and a running back, got a pick six for a touchdown in the championship game, and ran for a huge total in that game, despite the fact that he was wrapped tighter than, you know, probably Marie Kondo when she sees a messy room. So, I mean, Gurley certainly played through what the team didn't realize was a sprained MCL. Now we're hearing about all the issues that may come with that, and that's kind of clouding the issue of Darrell Henderson, who's come to this team, and people are wondering, well, you know, is he here to replace Todd Gurley? Is Todd Gurley going downhill? You know, we'll dig into all of that. I'll just say that, you know, one thing that we want to think about is that because the Rams got to the Super Bowl, one of the things that we saw was that most people say Jared Goff got exposed. You know, and I have a lot of people I respect in this industry who do a lot of studying of players and scheme, and they looked at this and felt like, you know, Jared Goff got exposed as the howdy doody puppet that he is. And my take on it is different, is that Sean McVay got exposed for going waltzing into into the Super Bowl with the same basic, you know, set up that they've been doing all season long with, you know, they run a minimum number of plays, but they run a base set of plays that they do a lot of do a lot of adjustments off of, but it's not, they don't have a huge thick playbook. And he had the hubris to think that he could do the same thing against Belichick, even though Belichick watched Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions dismantle certain key aspects of that game, something I even profiled in my gut check columns last year, showing that, you know, how they dismantled the screen game and some of that jet sweep action, and how that all that combines together, and how they were tricking this offensive line with stunts in ways that was really disrupting Goff, and they didn't have an answer for it because Goff didn't have anything schemed as an answer that they could work on. It was kind of like, you know, you could sit there and say, well, Goff needed to find an answer, but the scheme didn't have enough answers for him to really even go to in some of those situations. And so then the Bears took that the following week and did the same thing to Goff. So there were teams that actually figured out answers and did good scouting on this. And of course the Patriots were going to do that, you know? So McVay to me was someone who, you know, I think realized this offseason that he needed to add another element to his offense, because if he wanted to go more basketball than, you know, where it's like, here we have a certain number of plays and we find adjustments off that and we keep defenses guessing with this base number and not call obscure plays in the back of a playbook like Andy Reid, where, you know, Andy Reid's playbook is more of an encyclopedia, or it used to be, you know, and now he's even going towards more of that college collegiate model where you can be a little more basketball and improvisational off of it and adjust off of it in the second half with similar looks. They need to add another wing to this building that's this offense. And that wing, I think, is going to be Darrell Henderson. And we'll talk about that more. But, you know, to me, those are some of the questions people need to think about is Jared Goff. Are we going to be down on Jared Goff because we saw the Super Bowl and people thinking he's exposed? Or is that really more of something that McVay is going to need to adjust to and it's more on him than it was on Goff? Is Gurley going to be healthy enough? And if he is, what's his upside? What's Darrell Henderson's role? And then, you know, and then we can look at the everything else that falls out from there.
Yeah, I think when you look at the Rams, you know, what I think you bring up some really good points. One, the simplicity of what they do. Essentially, when you think about how they operate, they've done some things that have just confused defenses from a conceptual standpoint. Number one, they line up under center a lot. They line up under center way more than the rest of the league. So if you look at the Rams, they're at 63% of their plays come from under center versus 37% for every other team. So yeah, they're lining up under center.
And that's hard then for a number two compared to playing from shotgun, which is kind of interesting in its own right.
Right. So the second thing, though, that they do, right, is if you look at their run rate from under center, it's 66%, which is right around the league average, 68%. And then whenever you look at how often they're in shotgun, which is much less, they're only in shotgun 38% of the time, but they only run out of shotgun 4%.
Okay.
So there are some tendencies, right, just right off the bat on the surface. But what the Rams do is the league's used to playing against 11 personnel, but they just weren't used to it from under center.
Yeah.
And the reason the Rams wanted to do it was because of the other things you talked about. It allows them to use that jet sweep action. You can still do it out of shotgun, but it's more hidden, right? I think Sean McVay is the guy that likes when the quarterback turns his back to the defense and you're not quite sure what he's doing with the ball.
Yes.
Versus, you know, quarterback's facing you from shotgun, that the linebackers and the safeties and everybody coming down, they have a much better view of what's, are you pitching that ball off? Are you keeping it yourself? Yeah, there's this blind spot maybe in the mesh point for a second on some of these zone reads. But McVay, I think he's, the way he crafts this offense, I think he likes that element of surprise. And so that's why they go under center. And it stresses teams out because they're used to seeing 11 personnel a lot, but they're not used to seeing 11 personnel from under center all the time.
Yes.
Mixed in with jet sweeps, plus a zone action game that happens to have a good running back like Todd Gurley.
Yeah,
and then you mix in boots and all the other things
at you while all of that big question is coming, because you get the wrong answer and you get Gurley in your face.
And it's not just three receivers, right? It's three quality receivers. I would argue none of the receivers on the Rams are elite, but they're three really good receivers,
yes,
right? Cooper Kupp does his thing really well. Robert Woods is good at the things that he does. And then Brandon Cooks is good at the things that he does. And if you look at it, their average depth of target is almost the same,
yeah,
right? It's not like some teams where it's levels of this guy usually gets the ball, you know, short, you know, in the 5 to 7 yard range. This guy gets the ball, you know, in the 7 to 12 range. And then this guy is like the 16 yard down the field guy. They are all asked to do everything. And that's why their average depth of target blends out to be about the same. And they all look like intermediate pass options, but they all get deep targets. They all get short targets. They all get intermediate targets. I mean, some people think Brandon Cooks is really fast and he's just the vertical element. No, he's not. No. He doesn't really get many more deep targets than the other guys. He's actually, you know, whenever he's at his best is on run after the catch.
Yes.
After he creates some separation. And so I think when you put that talent together with now these concepts that defenses just weren't used to, you know, it just took them a while, you know, to start to catch up. And I think you ask a great question. The question is, this year, do more and more teams start to catch up because they're going to go study the film that, you know, like you said, the Lions put out there on them, the Bears put out there, and then certainly the Patriots put out there on them. And I think one of the answers you're seeing is from McVay saying, oh, really? Well, we're going to add another wrinkle now. And guess what his name is?
Yep.
Darrell Henderson. It's not so much just about, I'm sure Todd Gurley's knee is part of their thought process. But when I think about Darrell Henderson, he could play a really cool role in this offense, even if Todd Gurley is fully healthy. because of he's a versatile player. He not only can serve as a change of pace back, he can be on the field at the same time as Todd Gurley. He can be the guy running some of those jet sweeps and doing some of those things that you talked about. But he's a much better ball carrier with the ball in his hands than, say, a Robert Woods.
Yeah.
So when I think about this offense, I think it's going to have, to your point, I think it is going to have to develop. Because if you look at Jared Goff, you know, jumping over to the quarterbacks, he threw for 329 yards per game with Cooper Kupp, right? 257 yards per game without him. Another interesting split I found on Jared Goff was 270 yards per game versus top 16 run defenses. So defenses that were better at taking away the run, Jared Goff was worse. When you look at Jared Goff versus bottom 16 run defenses that were having their way, 323 yards per game. He is a plus 2.6 and a plus 3.7 yards per attempt on play action each on the last two seasons. That's two of the highest marks, like over the last 7 years of anyone. He owns two of them. So this team, I know people want to make fun of it and they say, oh yeah, establish the run. Who cares? This team actually, you know, does. And they still pass more in tight situations than they do run. But the threat of the run is there because they come out under center. Everybody in the league thinks, oh, if you're under center, 70% of the time, the league runs the ball. And they're close to that number too. But when they do go to throw, they're so efficient with it. And it just it catches people. I think it just it really puts defenses in a real tough spot, right? Because they do know they can run the ball so well. But now you know that they can also throw it. So, but this is a team where when the running game is going well and the matchups are good in the running game, the offense builds momentum off of it.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is that's the tough part with this is because the conundrum here with this is that if you say, well, they're such a good run team that, you know, Goff works so well off of that, then you say, well, Goff has a crutch. And he needs that crutch, but are we conflating that with the scheme being so dependent on what it is that, you know, I mean, we don't look at Nick Mullins and Jimmy Garoppolo and say they're the same quality player because they had a similar amount of stats over that one course of time and that they're no better off with Garoppolo than they are with Mullen. I think
Goff gets a little bit of a bad rap to your point, Matt. And I think there's a few things going into it. One, he was terrible under Jim Fisher. Well, I look back at that and think he was a rookie Jeff Fisher. Yeah. I look back at that. He was a rookie, which we typically see rookies struggle. And then number two, he was on a team that didn't have a good scheme and didn't have any playmakers, yeah. You know? So for me, it's kind of hard to sit here and say, well, Jared Goff is only a product of McVay and can only do well because of the running game. The way I look at it is Jared Goff's a solid quarterback, and he is fortunate that he landed in this system. But we could be saying this about any quarterback.
Yeah.
70% of the quarterbacks in the league might be better in this scheme.
Yeah.
Right? But maybe not, because just last week we talked about a guy in Derek Carr that when you really dug into the numbers, it seemed like any time under pressure had to turn his back and reacclimate himself to a defense, any of those kind of things. He couldn't do any of those things. Jared Goff is doing all of those things. You know, when I look at Jared Goff and I look at what he's done, you know, in his deep passing game, it's gotten better every single year. He's gone from a 23% to a 35% to a 45% completion rate. Wow. So he's doing really good there. If I look at how he's handling pressure, that's gotten better every single year. Last year, he took a little bit of a dip. He had 5 touchdown passes and 5 picks versus the year before, 7 touchdowns and 1 pick. You know, but his sack rates have gotten better. You know, his completion percent is a little bit low under pressure. One of the things, I don't know if you have any of this track, but one of the things I noticed with Goff down the stretch is, yes, when he was under pressure, he was worse, but most quarterbacks are. But the kind of pressure he was facing, it was like straight up the middle.
Yes.
It was like right in his face, right, yes, in his lap, like immediately.
Because they were running, like, well, they were running twists on him and they were being able to ignore some of the screen game. And so there were certain things happening where Goff was dealing with misassigned plays by or misassignments
from the offensive line, where literally ends were running up the middle on him and in his face by the time he finished dropping back, or by the time he finished doing any type of play action or any type of ball handling that was embedded into the type of play, because defenses realized what the weakness was. So it only makes sense that his numbers went down there and it was that type of pressure.
Right. And that's where I do wish, like, for Pro Football Focus, I wish we had that, like, tracked. I love that they give you pressure, but not all pressure is equal,
yeah.
Right? Whenever you got pressure coming from the outside and you expect it and you can step up, that's one thing. Whenever something blows up in your face immediately and the edges are already set, you're boxed. There's not a lot of places to go unless you want to retreat back around your tackle. Right. And then all of a sudden you're in harm's way with two people. You know, a lot of the elite quarterbacks will give that kind of little pump fake. Right. And then kind of give that little shoulder dip, you know, to get away. But, you know, there are times where that just doesn't work. So for me, when I look at it last year, yeah, he took a little bit of a step back, but the year before was elite under pressure with 7 touchdowns and 1 pick. I would say the jury is still out. Now, if we saw that again this year and it wasn't just pressure up the middle, then I would think, okay, maybe there is something with Jared Carr.
He would be Jared Carr at that point.
Yes, but I don't think he's there. Yeah. He to me is still improving too much year over year. And we haven't seen anything where he just falls straight on his face other than, you know, what happened with his rookie year. And again, that happens with rookies.
Yeah. And I had, you know, the thing that impressed me the most about Jared Goff when I watched him even as a rookie, but before that at Cal, was how excellent he was against pressure. I mean, he was a terrific player maneuvering the pocket with just one or two steps. He showed that economy that you saw from players that, you know, when I mention their names, people will go, you compared him to so-and-so. No, I'm just comparing one aspect of his game to players like Dan Marino or Joe Montana, or, you know, highly, highly skilled Tom Brady, you know, players who understood that a step or two was all you needed and you didn't need to bolt from the pocket or make dramatic moves. And then you could reset and fire. And Goff was excellent at that. So I'm not surprised by the dip, but yeah, I see where you're going with that. So from a projection standpoint, just talking about Goff, I mean, I have him at 582 attempts. I don't have, again, Dwayne's going to break down the percentages of run to pass. I haven't done that yet. I'll probably be doing that next year. Obviously learning from what we have with Dwayne, with, you know, the fine projections that he does, I'll be probably doing that next year. But I'm in 582 attempts for a 68% completion percentage, 4,819 yards, 8.28 yards per attempt. I'm at 36 touchdowns for a 6.2 touchdown per attempt percentage and 12 interceptions at a 2.1 rate of interceptions to attempts. And I have him at about 35 rushes, 79 yards, and one touchdown, putting him in a range that's probably, you know, if you're looking at fantasy perspective, he's one of those guys that you can probably, that's, you know, kind of variable enough that you might be able to get him after Kyler Murray, or you might have to take him just before. It just depends on the rampant love that preseason love that's going to occur for Kyler Murray as soon as he runs for a 60-yard touchdown in a preseason game.
Yeah. So for me, just taking one step back, I have the team at 1,000 attempts. You know, Vegas has the Rams at 10.5 wins. I've got them at 55% passing, 45% rushing. So that's 550 pass attempts, 450 rushes. And so for Goff, we're not too far off here. I've got 550 attempts, so I'm a little lower than you. If they were to get into some more game scenarios where they trailed, you know, more, or were even in closer games, because McVay will pass when tied and when trailing, you know, due to the nature of how often the Rams get up on teams by 2 and 3 scores, you know, by late in games. That's part of what holds, you know, his rushing percentages, you know, over the last 2 years at 47% and 45%, because really he does pass first. Now his run's so effective, it helps set up the pass. So 550 attempts, 63% completion rate. I've got him at 8.2 yards per attempt. So that's 4,500 yards. I've got his touchdowns per attempt at 5.25%. That's 29 touchdowns. And I've got his interceptions at 13. And then I've got him at 75 yards rushing and one rushing touchdown. So almost right at 300 fantasy points, a little bit ahead of the guy we just talked about earlier with Jimmy Garoppolo. But similarly, you know, Goff is a guy that I see he could eventually have that year, right, where he has a 7.5% touchdown per attempt rate. His yards are probably going to be pretty close to where we've got him. But there could be that year that comes along where it's like, wow, Jared Goff just threw for 38, 39 touchdowns.
Right.
You know, that's totally within his range of outcomes. At his median, I've got him at 29.
Nice. So let's break down the receivers here then. You know, we have Brandon Cooks. You did such a great job of explaining how each of these guys, their ADOT kind of blends together, average depth of target. You know, it's kind of very similar in terms of how it looks. You know, Cooks certainly, as you mentioned, you know, he's the yards after the catch guy. Woods, but all of them offer that. What's interesting about all these guys is Woods is a very good runner in his own right. He's probably he and Cooper Kupp are the best two route runners on the squad. Kupp's probably the best red zone threat of the three. He and Goff have a very good connection there, and Kupp wins, you know. Cooks is the guy that's going to win, beat you on post routes and go routes. Robert Woods is going to beat you on play action, deep routes with most likely going to be in the middle of the field or on double moves. And then Cooper Kupp's the guy that will beat you either with a double move or on deep corner routes and deep crossing routes, you know, where he's going to win early with his acceleration, but be able to have a throw where the pattern breaks towards the boundary or across the field where he can maximize his separation. So, you know, from that standpoint, I have them all at a very similar target range. Like I have Cooks and Woods each at 110 targets, Cooper Kupp at 107. So if I start with Cooks, I have him at 110 targets. I have him at 65 catches, 978 yards. And a lot of people, this is going to be lower than I think a lot of people have him. I'm at 978 yards, 15 yards per catch, 5 touchdowns. He's not much of a touchdown guy. And I think the reason that is from what I see on film, even back to his Oregon State days, is that he's not very good at contested catches where he's facing where he's having to overcome the defender. If the defender's just going to hit him in the back as he makes the catch, that's fine. It's kind of a mixed deal. He'll sometimes catch those, sometimes he doesn't. But he's not Steve Smith. Okay. He may play him in a TV docudrama, but he's not really Steve Smith. He's a guy that really is not that physical. He gives you mixed results after contact. But after the catch, he can certainly do wonders for you. So I have his numbers going down a little bit with Cooper Kupp returning. But here's the problem with that. Cooper Kupp's return, is he really going to be ready at the start of the season, or are we going to start to see his game slowly ramp up as it goes along? And I'm probably too optimistic about Cooper Kupp returning, and that means that his numbers are a little higher than they should be, and Cooks's are a little too low. So if I'm going to make an adjustment here, it's going to be adding more to Cooks from what I have for Kupp, because Kupp, I have at 107 targets, 75 catches, leading the team, 1,062 yards, leading the team, and 10 touchdowns, leading the team. So those are overly optimistic. I think that's his ceiling. If he just like completely comes back healthy to begin the year and there's no issues whatsoever. But I think it's becoming clearer and clearer as the news cycle goes on that he's going to need a little bit more time. So a lot of those numbers that I just mentioned will probably end up being siphoned off to Cooks. Woods, I have at 110 targets, 70 catches, 972 yards at about a 13.8 yards per catch average, and 7 touchdowns. He kind of splits the difference between Cooks and Kupp. He's the middleman in terms of all of that. And then
you can add another probably about 800 yards spread out between guys like Josh Reynolds, Gerald Everett, and Tyler Higbee as guys that are going to get somewhere between 200, you know, about 300 to 370 yards between each of those guys. They'll probably each get something around that range, and they might account for about six touchdowns that will occur, you know, in Goff's portfolio of 36 touchdowns. But they're certainly complementary pieces at best.
Yeah, we're of the same thought process around the receivers. This is such a balanced offense that you're just not going to see anybody with like a 25-30% target share, because you literally have three guys that all can be right around 20, right? Yeah. And it's good for the offense. That's how the Rams win. You know, you can if you think of rule of three, this is like the ultimate rule of three. You know, none of these guys are elite, but they're all really good. And then you add in the running game to go with it and sprinkle in, you know, some plays from other guys. You know, it's a very diverse offense. It's an offense that can react to many different types of coverages. So I've got it at Robert Woods leading the way with 21% of the targets. Last year he had 22%. So I've got him at 116 targets, 75 catches, 1,050 yards. I've got him at six touchdowns. Brandon Cooks, I've got at 19%, which is where he was last year. And that's 105 targets, 68 catches, 15 yards per catch. Woods was 14 on that. So this is 15 yards per catch for Brandon Cooks based on, you know, his run after the catch ability we talked about. 1,020 yards. That's a little lower than he was last year. Last year he was almost right at 1,200. But if you look at his years before, he's had one right around 1,000. Then he's had another one before that where he's around like 1,100. So it won't surprise me if he's around 1,100 yards. Right. You know, I've got him somewhere in the 1,000 to 1,100 yard range. I've got him at six touchdowns. Then Cooper Kupp, I have at the lowest right now just because I'm assuming even if he is back, he's going to be a little bit more limited than the other two guys. But I don't have him much lower. I just have him at 18%. I will lower that a little bit more heading into the season if he continues to remain out. The thing is, it's not something where you all of a sudden stack that on to Brandon Cooks or Robert Woods, because we saw what happened. It happened last year. When Cooper Kupp went down, Josh Reynolds came in, and Josh Reynolds, if you look at his target share on just the games where he played for Cooper Kupp, it wasn't quite as good. But it was similar, right? You know, he was still up in like the 15% range. So, Cooper Kupp, I've got at 18%. That's 99 targets. I've got him at 65 catches, 900 yards, and I've got him at 6.5 touchdowns. So I've got them all close on touch. I agree with you that Kupp does have the most upside with touchdowns. And if I were assuming full health on him, I would probably have his touchdowns right around an 8 instead of a 6. I would have him leading the way. So if you look back to, you know, last year and what these guys did, it's pretty similar. This is an offense where when we think about the receivers, I don't see a ton changing, right? I see it being pretty evenly spread. I'm similar to you. I've got 8% to Everett and 5% to Higbee. You know, so you can spread that out for between those two guys. I'm looking at about, you know, 40 to 50 catches, about 500 yards and 4 to 5 touchdowns between them. And then running backs. So I've got Todd Gurley at 10% of the targets. Last year he was at 15%. So I do think this is one of the areas Darrell Henderson will help ease the load on Todd Gurley. I've got Darrell Henderson at 10% of the targets. So I've got them both at 55 targets. I've got them at 41 receptions each. I've got them at a very healthy yards per catch. That's something this offense that, you know, and we talked about it in the previous offense with the 49ers. Really, this offense is based on Kyle Shanahan's offense. It just incorporates much more 11 personnel from under center versus Shanahan's. You're just going to see a lot more of a fullback or two tight ends, which could change now, right? Since Shanahan's changed his, you know, his personnel and he's got more receivers. I think we could see more McVay type looks from Kyle Shanahan this year. But looking at Gurley and Darrell Henderson, I have them both at 9 yards per catch. Which is very rare that I rate running backs that high in yards per catch. This is one of the few teams I do it with. San Francisco is the other. And then, you know, of course, you know, unless you're talking about somebody like Alvin Kamara or a James White, you know, these guys that work more downfield as receivers. So that puts Gurley at, that puts them each at 370 yards receiving. and I've got them each at 3 receiving touchdowns as well.
Okay. That's great. You know, and it's funny, you know, I'll talk a little bit about what I think about Gurley and Henderson, and just note that if you're an RSP subscriber, within the next day or two, you're going to get a chance to see Dwayne break down Darrell Henderson in great detail with highs and lows and medians, with the median of, in terms of his projection and how he went through all of that. And it's going to be exclusive to RSP subscribers, as along with a Josh Jacob look at Josh Jacobs as well. And that'll be coming out in the newsletter this month. I probably will be writing the newsletter tonight. Today is Tuesday, 7/23. In case you are wondering when you get this, when you listen to this podcast. So you should see something Wednesday or Thursday in your inbox. And if you haven't, let me know at mountwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. We'll get you straightened out. Gurley and Henderson. I'm a believer that they brought in Darrell Henderson not to be Malcolm Brown. Malcolm Brown, if Todd Gurley gets hurt, Malcolm Brown will be like kind of the base down runner. And Darrell Henderson will be what Darrell Henderson was when Gurley was on the field in the first place. Now, that may change year two or year three when they start to, you know, really figure out what they can do with him. But I think Henderson's a guy that right away you're going to see him as that change of pace guy who will either be in the backfield with Gurley at the same time, in the same way that Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram were on the field at the same time, and presents levels of confusion for the defense, where Henderson may be split outside and then they run the jet sweep with him, or they put Henderson in the backfield and do the same with Gurley. Or you see certain situations where Henderson's targeted deeper in routes. I have a little bit more targets than Dwayne. I have 69 targets for Gurley, 61 for Henderson. I have 51 catches for Gurley, 50 for Henderson. But I have more yards per catch on Gurley. I have him at 450 at about 8.8 yards per catch and 4 touchdowns. And I have Henderson at 354 yards, 7 yards per catch at about, and still 4 touchdowns. I think that, I guess for whatever reason, I know that Henderson can be a big threat downfield, but I don't think he's as proven yet in the pro game with that. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of this love for touchdowns and for yardage in the receiving game going to Henderson in the red zone, where they kind of play some of this stuff up in the red zone a little bit. So maybe the efficiencies are a little bit lower in terms of yardage there, but still very effective. In terms of the rushing yards, you know, again, I think Gurley is going to be shown that. I think what's happening here is the whole scare about Gurley's knee is that, yeah, he hit his injury. It kind of compounded things. Yeah, he probably has arthritis in his knees. That compounds the worries. But really all this is we're adding Darrell Henderson as an extra dimension. Maybe he's good enough that we can get him to replace Gurley and they have some overlap once Gurley's contract goes, starts to end, or as he gets older and they decide to get rid of him. But I think at this stage, really what this is he's an added weapon, and that Gurley, we also at the same time get to give Gurley a little bit more rest and not use him quite as heavily as we used to, but not that he's about to fall apart. So I have Gurley at 250 attempts, 1,100 yards, 4.4 yards average, 8 touchdowns right now. And I may even raise this a little bit as the preseason goes along. We'll see. I have Darrell Henderson at 121 attempts, 776 yards, because I think they're going to give him high leverage looks where he's going to benefit from some of these jet sweeps, and where Robert Woods or Brandon Cooks looks like a threat, Darrell Henderson is going to make those guys look silly when he gets jet sweeps by comparison. And I think that we're going to see some of his huge plays come from run plays more than pass plays.
Yeah, I have Gurley at 55%. Of the team rushes last year, he was right at 65%. So that back to that 450 attempts, it was 1,000 plays, 45% of the time running. That gives him 248 attempts, or right at the 250 that you said. I've got him at 1,115 yards. I've got him still at 65% of the team rushing touchdowns. And so I've got Gurley at 12 touchdowns rushing still.
There you go.
I've just taken him down from a standpoint where I see, you know, Henderson And here's what I see happening with Gurley. I'll just lay it out for folks. I'm very much of the same mind as you. I think Henderson will help provide weekly, a little bit less for Gurley. I think it because he can come on the field, he can do some of the things as a receiver, he can be a change of pace back. McVay has wanted a change of pace back ever since he got there. He really wanted Lance Dunbar. It just didn't work out. Dunbar couldn't stay healthy. But if you go back and look at the few games where Dunbar was playing, he was seeing about 20 snaps. Now, a few of those were with Gurley where they were on the field together. But I think I want to say about 15 of those snaps was him replacing Gurley. And Gurley just hasn't had that recently. And so I think he's going to give Gurley that kind of relief, which will help, you know, go into Gurley's maintenance plan. And so I see Daryl Henderson as being able to have some standalone value. I won't go super deep into it. Like you said, there's an article that will drop this week. People can see all of that. But right here at his baseline, I've got him at 25% of the carries. You know, so that's 115 carries. I've got him at 500 yards rushing. It could easily be more. I just don't typically project anything higher than 4.5 yards, even in this offense, because there's so much regression to the mean with yards per carry. Right. And then if you look at touchdowns, I've got him at 3.5 touchdowns rushing. So right at 4 touchdowns rushing, plus the receiving yardage. So that puts him at right at 165 fantasy points out of the gate. And if you were to go back, if we have folks that are, you know, fantasy players listening, if you go back and you look at the in a full PPR format, if you go back and you look at what your running back 24, 25, 26 range is over the last 3 to 4 years, it's right around 165 points. So that nearly puts that's basically Daryl Henderson, even with Todd Gurley keeping this role that he has here, makes him an RB3. He's a flex kind of guy. Right.
Yeah.
Now, if they decide to monitor Gurley and shut him down, you know, for bigger periods of games and things like that, I think that's where Malcolm Brown does become more of a factor. For example, if they're blowing someone out and Gurley doesn't need to play the fourth quarter because they're up by 21, I'm with you. I think Malcolm Brown's the guy in the game getting those carries right that Gurley would typically get. Henderson may pick up a little bit more in those scenarios. And then the same thing, if Todd Gurley needs to be shut down for a few different games or for some stretch of period, either just because, you know, the Rams, you know, feel good about where they are in the division or because, you know, Gurley's got something going on with his knee, I think that's when Malcolm Brown's role and his value to fantasy owners becomes much bigger. Right now, I've got Malcolm Brown at 15% of the total carries, and most of that is coming due to he may give Gurley a breather maybe once or twice, you know, a game, and then coming on to help close out games whenever they're up by 2 or 3 scores.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And this was an enlightening show for sure when it comes to getting a chance to talk about the Rams and what their potentials are. And if you want to learn more from Dwayne McFarland, certainly you can tune into his work at Dwayne McFarland on Twitter. You can certainly find his work at Football Guys with Projection Spectrum, as well as Unskew Your View at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, RSP Film and Data, also at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. You can find me at Matt Waldman on Twitter. And, you know, we just want to thank you very much for the great feedback that you've all provided to us about this projection series. Certainly, it's been a lot of fun to be able to do, and we're going to continue doing this until we've covered the league. And we're probably about halfway through at this point. So thank you, everyone. You guys have a terrific week. I'm probably going to split this episode into two of them, and we'll go from there.